We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM, joined by a special guest right now over the phone, Paul Betson, author of the book, The Boxing Kings, When American Heavyweights Ruled the Ring. Paul, we left that last segment by talking about Joe Louis, and there's a couple of other individual fighters I would love to talk about, but you can't talk about Joe Louis without mentioning Rocky Marciano, who goes down, well, before Floyd Mayweather, of getting to 50-0. He was 49-0 as an American heavyweight. We're talking about one of the most decorated boxers in our country. Again, at that point in time where the heavyweight division was held in such high esteem, this guy finished 49-0. Talk about Rocky Marciano and the connections to Joe Louis.
Well, Rocky Marciano came along after Joe Louis, of course, and he, as a young man, listened to Louis's fights on the radio, as a whole generation of Americans did. And Rocky was a son of Italian immigrants, and again, it's a sign of the kind of racial and social progress of people starting to get more liberal attitudes about this, more accepting attitudes about this. That he would be rooting for Louis himself when he would listen on the radio. I wasn't thinking about all this racial stuff, you know. So that was a positive thing. He had great admiration for Louis, and when Marciano began his pro career after a couple years in, he was starting to climb the ranks of the heavyweight division. By now, Louis had retired. He had retired as champion, but then because of his financial problems, came back into the ring, and who does he wind up facing in 1951 but this young rising contender, Rocky Marciano. So they meet in Madison Square Garden. Louis is 37, Marciano is 28, it's a tough fight, pretty good fight for three or four rounds, but Marciano is just too strong and overpowers Louis and knocks him out in the eighth round in a particularly brutal fashion. Louis is against the ropes, his arms are down, and Marciano puts over the final right hand, and Louis falls half between the ropes onto the apron of the ring. His head is bobbing up against the ringside photographers, and it's the final end for Joe Louis, the sad ending of his career, as many great champions will lose that final fight. And Marciano, that was a crucial victory for him to advance himself, but he felt very badly about it. And according to some accounts in the in his biographies, he cried in his dressing room after and sent Louis a condolence note. So he was really knocking out his idol there. And then from there, Marciano goes on a year later to win the heavyweight title and held it for three and a half years. And as you said, he wound up retiring at 49-0, unbeaten. He's the only heavyweight champion never to lose a fight. So that's a special mark, and it obviously accounts for one of the reasons Floyd Mayweather wanted to, you know, get that into his targets and surmount it. Some listeners might remember that back in the 80s, Larry Holmes came close to equaling it as well. Larry Holmes was a great heavyweight champion, often forgotten, dominated the first half of the 1980s. He was 48-0 and had one more to go to tie Marciano, and he was beaten in that fight by Michael Spinks. So the Marciano record has a funny way of coming back from time to time into boxing, because it's one of those things like the 56-game hitting streak of Joe DiMaggio. You know, it just kind of sticks in the mind, and it does come up from time to time because fighters come along who want to see if they can equal it.
Again, we're being joined right now by Paul Betson. He is the author of the new book, The Boxing Kings, When American Heavyweights Ruled the Ring. Paul, let's skip ahead. Let's go all the way to the Mike Tyson era. Now, you know, we've already talked about the likes of Jack Johnson and Joe Louis and Rocky Marciano. We briefly talked about Muhammad Ali. Boxing was such a different game by the time Mike Tyson had captivated a new audience. I mean, I believe you'd have to go back to 1971. Joe Frazier was the first fighter to earn $1 million, if I remember correctly. The first heavyweight fighter to win $1 million in a fight, in his first fight with Muhammad Ali. That was the norm by the time Mike Tyson had kind of captivated a brand new audience. And the boxing game had changed drastically by this point.
Yeah, the boxing game had changed a lot, and yeah, the big money purses had really come in, especially after Ali. I mean, Ali, his promotional abilities really drove up purses, and by the time he was finished, you know, when Larry Holmes was fighting his biggest fight in the early 80s, made $10 million for that fight, and by the time Tyson was coming along in the late 80s and he had his biggest fights, he was making $20 million. Of course, these numbers now seem ridiculously small when you read that Floyd Mayweather make $200 or $300 million for a fight. It's just really hard to wrap your mind around, but Tyson came along when the heavyweights had been quiet for a while. Again, it seems unjust to say that with regard to Larry Holmes, because he was such an excellent champion, but he did not have that special ingredient, which is sometimes hard to identify, that captures public imagination. He had the bad luck of following Ali and then coming before Tyson. He's kind of sandwiched between these two incredibly charismatic figures. So the attention had kind of gotten off the heavyweights a little bit. For boxing's sake, it was very fortunate because they had Sugar Ray Leonard and Duran and Marvin Hagler and Thomas Hearns and all those guys going at it in the 80s. So there were a lot of big fights. Boxing in the 80s was doing well for public interest. And just as those guys were starting to wind down, Mike Tyson comes along, and he's the savior for the heavyweight division, and he returns the heavyweights in an instant, right back to the top of people's focus. I mean, once he's in the game, forget it. People want to see Tyson, and he was just an electrifying performer. I mean, you didn't want to leave the room. I mean, you sure didn't want to make sure that you missed the first round, because that might be the only one. So that's just one of those appeals that Jack Dempsey had it before, back in the 20s. Same kind of appeal, you know, you just this magnetic quality that people need to see him fight because of the aggressiveness. And so he was just a giant. I mean, from the late 80s to the early 90s, and then, of course, he's just kind of one of those examples of too much too soon. And he was only 23 years old when he lost his title to Buster Douglas in February 1990 in Tokyo, which is pretty justifiably called the greatest upset in boxing history.
As far as Mike Tyson's story goes, and again, this is one of the chapters that I have definitely read. It's so interesting to me to see how this guy's life evolved in such a short period of time, and then it was gone in such a short period of time. As far as the marketability for Mike Tyson, which I don't think ever fully left, but it definitely took major blows along the way. I mean, you mentioned the loss to Buster Douglas. Once Mike Tyson comes back, and we finally get the fight with Evander Holyfield that we thought we were going to get in 1991, not only was he beaten handily by Evander Holyfield in the first going. The second rematch, of course, is the Bite Fight, which you also mentioned. It just seems to me, Paul, that when you look at Mike Tyson's career, it could have been so much more. It moved too quickly at the beginning, and it ended too fast at the end.
That's absolutely right. I think, I don't have the sentence in front of me, but I said something like, you know, a lot of the chapters were torn out of the book. You know, that's kind of the sense that I think a lot of fans were left with Tyson. That wasn't there more? I thought there was a whole. But it's kind of like being forced to leave a movie a third of the way in. You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. Where are we going here? And his career had that feeling to it from the moment he lost to Buster Douglas. Really, now in retrospect, when you look back, that was really kind of the end. I mean, he did come back in the mid '90s after he served his rape conviction, but. It was really a pale imitation of what he had been, and as you said, once he met up with a fighter of his caliber, Evander Holyfield, he couldn't beat him. So, I think there is a great sense of incompleteness to Tyson's career. On the other hand, you do look at the two or three years in which he was dominant in the late '80s, and there aren't that many heavyweights who've even done that. I mean, he did go through the division pretty well. And quickly and decisively. So, you know, he deserves his place, but it is always a place that will have some ambiguity to it, because you have that sense that there could have been so much more.
Not a huge selection on the heavyweights once we get past the talk of the Holyfield and the Tyson, the two-fight saga that we had there. But in between and around that same era, there were some other very interesting heavyweight storylines. I know you do mention George Foreman for just a bit. I mean, he stepped back into the ring against Evander Holyfield. A lot of people mocked George Foreman at that particular time in his career. His quest was to win the heavyweight championship. He actually succeeded in that plan by knocking out Michael Moore. I know you mentioned Riddick Bowe. To me, and again, that was the era that I grew up into the heavyweight division. It was a very fun time for the world of boxing.
Yes, it was. I mean, the 90s, in fact, the last chapter is when I covered the 90s, and I said that, it was really just like a merry-go-round. I mean, it was every time you thought that you had it figured out or what was going to happen next, the script would get overturned. You know, Riddick Bowe arrives in 1992, just after Tyson has gone to prison, and he beats Holyfield, and people say, okay, now he's going to be the guy because he's so big, he's so strong, he's got great boxing skills. Holyfield, people always thought, was maybe a little too small, and Bowe is beating him, and now he's going to take over. Well, the next year, Holyfield, in a rematch, takes the title back. Okay? Well, maybe Holyfield's the guy. 4 or 5 months later, he loses to Michael Moore. Wow, okay, who's this Michael Moore guy? He's going to fight George Foreman. Well, that's not a serious fight. George Foreman knocks him out, you know? So it kind of goes back and forth like that, and there was a lot of drama to it. And then, of course, not long after that, Tyson is getting out of prison, so now he's getting back in the mix. And you've got Tyson and Holyfield and Bo and George Foreman. And so, yeah, it was an exciting time in the heavyweight ranks and really about as busy and bustling as any other time except for the 70s when you had Ali and Frazier and Foreman and guys like Ken Norton and Ron Lyle and all kinds of tough, interesting contenders. But the 90s was great. Unfortunately, it was also the end.
Right, right. And this is kind of I want a what-if question. I got to give you a what-if question here, Paul, because you did mention briefly in this chapter that the Tyson and the Foreman fight never came to fruition. We thought that we were going to get that. There were rumors of it taking place outside of the country, but it never came to fruition. I know we never got to see Tyson and Bo. So give me the what-if fight of the 90s. If Paul Beston was a promoter and you could go back in a time and you could create one super fight from the 90s, what would it be?
One super fight from the 90s. Well, I would have loved to have seen Holyfield and Tyson fight the time when they were supposed to fight in 1991, but that got interrupted. Tyson pled an injury in training, but most people think he was really starting to get very distracted by his legal defense for his rape trial was coming up, and then he was going to be convicted for that, and so that was the end of that. That fight didn't happen until 5 years later. So I think that would be one of them. Even then, though, in 1991, Tyson was a little diminished from what he had been, so you almost have to go back farther. And then if you go back farther, Holyfield wouldn't have been at his peak, so you know how those things go. Also, Tyson and Riddick Bowe, it's a shame that they never fought. Both from Brownsville, Brooklyn. That would have been quite a battle. And Riddick Bowe never fought Lennox Lewis, the British guy who also gets in here in the 90s. So it's a very competitive time. A lot of fights, actually. For all the activity that there was, there are a few fights that didn't happen.
Right. Fascinating stuff. Paul Beston, again, he is the author of the book, The Boxing Kings, When the American Heavyweights Ruled the Ring. Paul, it was a pleasure to get you on the air and talk a little bit about this book. Before I let you go, I'm going to let you sell this to the listeners on why they should go pick up The Boxing Kings, When American Heavyweights Ruled the Ring.
Sure. Well, it's first, the story of these guys is a story in itself. They're interesting characters. They're interesting people. They're not just athletes. Their stories say something about the country, and I think that's interesting in and of itself. And the other reason is to be reminded or to learn for the first time of the place that this sport and this title once had in the United States and in the history of sports. If you're a sports fan, this is a big part of the story, and you may not know it.
Paul, it was a pleasure to talk boxing with you over the last two segments here on the show. Thank you so much for taking out the time. And I got the PDF version of the book. I'm going to continue to read it. I've had to skip around to make sure we could touch on certain topics of it, but it's fantastic work, and I can't wait to get to the end of it. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jordan. I appreciate the time.
Terrific conversation right there with Paul Beston. Again, author of the book, The Boxing Kings, When American Heavyweights Ruled the Ring. It is available right now. I highly recommend you pick it up. We're out of time today on Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.